Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast in which two films with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. On this episode, in the red corner, you remind me of the babe. What babe? The babe with the power. What persuaded you to wear those trousers from 1986? It's Labyrinth.
Jim Henson, George Lucas, David Bowie. The world of Labyrinth.
And in the blue corner, Blade Runner was a movie that inspired other movies, like Mick Jagger's 1992, Free Jack.
Alex Furlong is about to die and enter the year 2009.
Tell me who's behind all this.
I'm sorry. Free Jack.
So what is the connection and which film does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, fight fans, and welcome to Clash of the Titles. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilly.
And today are my picks. Two movies picked by myself, so obviously I'm very much looking forward to talking about them. One was 1986's Labyrinth, which I gave to you, Victoria. One was 1992's Free Jack, which I gave to you, Chris. Guys, what connects these two movies?
Well, they're both films featuring characters who slowly lose their memories.
Okay.
That's... Actually, quite quickly lose their memories.
That's...
Is that the connection? Do you think that's the connection, Vicky?
No.
I know it.
They're both films with some arbitrary rules to help move the plot along.
That's
Is that true?
Pretty much every movie we've talked about.
there is a problem.
Are they films that both feature the stars of the Dancing in the Street video?
Ugh.
Damn it! That is what I've written down. I thought you were going to go more general, music stars, music icons making movies. I have written down here my choice words for what connects these two movies. Films starring music legends that appeared together in 1985's UK number one cover of Dancing in the Street. Shall we remember that moment?
If we must.
Two rock gods appearing to take the piss in that video, the way they're dancing.
I disagree. I think we can all actually agree on both individually and collaboratively their finest work ever. So, yeah, David Bowie and Mick Jagger. We start with Bowie because it's Labyrinth. We do it chronologically, 1986. Vicky, take us away.
I watch Labyrinth, where the world's worst babysitter faces down goblins, monsters and sexual overtures from a 40-year-old man in an ill-fitting catsuit, chucking some booze, glue and cigarettes, and that sounds like a normal Saturday night for any 15-year-old in the 1980s.
Wow, a little insight into Vicky's youth.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
A world where anything seems possible and nothing is what it seems.
I've done for you.
David Bowie, obviously, I'm a big fan, like a lot of people. So let's just get this out of the way early.
Mm.
Chris, Alex,
yep.
What's your favourite of David Bowie's testicles? Sorry.
Oh, my God. Do you know what? Okay, let's get the trouser situation out of the way because...
Well, I want to take it back a step first before we get there. How old were you when you first saw this? What's your first memory of seeing this? Because
are you asking if I'd seen a man's penis before this movie?
No, I'm just wondering how dramatically this imprinted on your mind, this cock.
It's... genuinely, I watched it, I think I must have been like 7 or 8 years old, at the right time to watch Labyrinth, and I do not remember anything about the crotch area of music legend David Bowie in this movie. And indeed, when I rewatched it for this show, I didn't notice it until that final scene when he comes in all dressed in white, looking ethereal.
It's there for the whole film.
Yeah, it is from the get-go.
What was your first memory
I
of this
feel
film?
The same as that. So I watched it when I was young. I don't know how young I was. And it just washed over me. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
agreed.
Creatures, puppets. Yep. You have no power over me. Brilliant. And then obviously watched it when I was a student. And it's very different when you watch it when you're a student. You're like, yeah, MC Escher, that's fucking brilliant. Oh, and there's a penis all the time.
The 80s were a very different time. A very different time. But
we have to say that on this show most weeks, I feel like.
And it's not even our fault. Do you know what I mean?
We were the innocents.
But, I mean, to look at it in a bigger picture, I honestly, I didn't recall it at the time.
No, no. You were looking at other stuff.
Hmm.
There was a shit ton of puppets on screen singing.
Do you know, I think the bit where Hoggle is right next to it is on purpose. You know, there's a bit where he sort of presses up. He doesn't get the back of his head, but he kind of almost does. I can't remember what they're talking about. And it's like, if it wasn't obvious before, he's made someone that a shot choice has happened and it's become very obvious.
I'm pleased we're doing this at the start because I do feel, as in the movie, this would distract from our analysis of Labyrinth if we didn't address it head on. Like, really stare it down.
Let's
look
get
it in the eye.
Let's get Bowie's bugle out of the way. Do you want a bit of an explanation as to how and why it happened?
What, the trousers?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
So there's a fantastic book that Tyson published a couple of years ago called The Ultimate Visual History.
Tyson.
Titan.
Oh, sorry, Titan.
Of Labyrinth. And in it...
Although it would be great if this was Mike Tyson's favourite film.
Is it Brian Froud? I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, yes.
Okay. Who came up with the designs for this film, came up with the idea with Jim Henson. He writes in the book, we got in a bit of trouble about how tight his pants were, but the choice was deliberate. We're not looking at reality, we're inside this girl's head. Jareth had tight pants because he is many, many things that a teenage girl relates to. He's a rock star, he's also a leather jacket guy, a classic bad boy, and he's Heathcliff. He's an amalgam of the inner fantasies of this girl.
That's extremely problematic.
And indeed, actually, if you look in that opening scene where you see a lot of stuff in a bedroom, there is a photo, a couple of photos of David Bowie, the rock star.
Oh, is there?
Yes. So he exists in her universe, and that's why Jareth looks like her in her fantasy.
There's nothing wrong with...
So she's aware of David Bowie.
The rock star.
The rock star, as in the musician David Bowie.
Mm.
And when he appears as Jareth and goes, I'm Jareth, the Goblin King, does she not go... No, you're not. You're David Bowie. Why doesn't she do that?
All the toys around her bedroom are like the toys in the creature she meets in the film. She doesn't recognise any of them either. It's kind of this weird waking dream she's
Gloom.
Having.
Which then... is a hell of a thing. That takes us back to...
that sounded like the voice of experience. It's a hell of a thing, kids. Don't go there. Auntie Vicky went there for you. And let me tell you, don't go there.
I've done all these things, so you don't have to. I haven't. That takes us to an interesting... I say interesting, I found it quite boring, but let's just, for the sake of balance, let's call it interesting for now and see what you think. Is it in Sarah Jennifer Connelly's head or not?
Certainly, reading quotes from all these people in the book who made the movie, it's in her head. Okay. But then the...
Oh, what? Really? I thought they'd go the other way. They're saying, so what's happened? The baby's crying in the other room, she's had a nap and dreamt all this up.
Yep. And then, which means that the ending really makes no sense. I wasn't going to jump to the ending right now, but the ending when they're all having a party in a room, is she having a psychotic episode at that point? Or it just contradicts everything that's gone before.
Yeah, because her parents have come home at that point because her dad goes, we're home.
Oh, yeah, he says, are you in? It's like, I should fucking hope you are because we left you in charge of a baby.
She waits. She doesn't immediately go...
Yes, she does. What a dick.
She doesn't immediately go, yeah, of course I'm here. Baby's asleep.
Yeah.
She goes,
Yeah, let them worry.
It's going to take some photos. Down. Oh, what was the question? Am I it? Oh, yeah. Just doing some glue.
Baby's fine.
I think that's also a product, that confusion, of the fact that there were 25 different scripts for this film.
Yeah.
It went through so many iterations. It had so many screenwriters. I mean, there's only one credited, Terry Jones, but George Lucas had a go at it. Jim Henson and some members of his family did. Some of the writers of Fraggle Rock did.
You can tell.
And then to flesh out the character of Sarah, Elaine May, who wrote Tootsie and Heaven Can Wait and The Birdcage, had a go at it. So
Terry Jones, basically, he hasn't disowned it. I think he's still proud of the movie, but he says what is on screen is very different to the script he wrote. And one of the big things was he wrote a script which never revealed the centre of the labyrinth. Yep. And he says his biggest regret is that Jim Henson, once David Bowie came on board, he was like, Bowie's going to be in the centre of the labyrinth and we're going to have him singing songs, so we're going to need to show that now. And Terry Jones, against his will a little bit, rewrote it to include the centre of the labyrinth, but he always felt you removed a massive hook, and I agree.
You do, of course you do. It's the classic fairy story. You have to, you know, you pick your way through the scary woods and the forest and you get to the spooky castle and then you see what's inside. Mm. It ruins everything to just, especially because of what goes on with magic dance. Like, if you're going to show up the castle, maybe make it better than that.
And baby said,
dance, magic, dance. Now, I'm not a parent, as you may have guessed. However, I did watch David Bowie chucking that kid about wearing very slippery looking leather gloves.
Yeah.
And it took my breath away. A terrifying way.
That's the thing.
You know it's not a baby the whole time. When it's being chucked.
When it's chucked about 10 metres in the air. Yeah, I know that's not a baby.
Just checking.
I know the 80s were different, but not that different. Although I did enjoy that scene because Michael Jackson was considered for that role. And you're like, Michael Jackson with a baby, that would have been a real, like, people could, he could then go, it was all right on the set of Labyrinth. Why is it not all right on the balcony in France?
Oh, no. That's the thing. David Bowie is chucking that baby around like only its parents should, I think. And you...
But you watch the behind the scenes, like, the mum is literally on the floor just by him.
I'm not surprised. Like, you can say what you like about CGI and it, like, ruins a very theatre-like aspect to it. It would have done to a film like this where you've got a human interacting with another person in a costume or a set or something like that. But that means that baby really was surrounded by 50 puppets and David Bowie and David Bowie's penis probably for a whole day. Mm. And you've got to think about mentally.
What's the most terrifying thing?
Well, and he recently spoke about it.
Who, the baby?
Toby Stroud. Not a baby anymore.
No, a man
Froud.
Now.
Is
a man now.
Froud?
Toby Froud. Yeah, Brian Froud's son.
Yeah.
Because interestingly, when they first came up with the idea, Brian Froud drew a painting of the goblins with a baby in the middle before his own child had been conceived. And his child ended up looking identical to the baby he'd drawn.
What a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
That's either a beautiful, like, being in communion with your future self, or it's that you know what you look like, so you draw me you. Or it's that all babies look essentially the same.
He does get, apparently, Toby Froud does get shouted at.
Sorry, I just showed it to Vicky. She went, oh, yeah.
It does look a bit like
God,
you.
Oh, God, he does as well. Oh, I take that back.
Sorry, Brian.
But Toby Froud gets shouted at a lot. He gets, are you the babe with the power? And I hate to say that I would be that guy. I would be the guy who went, wait, are you the babe from Labyrinth? The babe with the power. Are you? Are you the babe with the power? Isn't that funny? Toby, come back.
And he actually works in puppets now.
Didn't he work on The Dark Crystal?
Yeah, the new one, the new Netflix one, along with his dad, Brian.
And do you know what his production company's called?
I'm a Scared Baby.
Have a guess.
Repressed Memories.
Yeah.
A Stripey Pyjama Productions.
Oh,
isn't that cute?
That is cute. He's a cute baby, actually, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. He's my life. I cries a lot. I was at the start, I was like, oh my, I would be like, goblins, come and take this brat away.
Gosh, she, like, honestly, when they're like, oh, Sarah, we're going out for the night, the baby's fed and in bed, it's like, you lazy bitch, like, the hard work is done. What you got to do, sit around and watch telly for 4 hours?
Yeah. So they kind of set her up, I think, as quite an annoying, quite dislikable kid, and then through the course of the film she learns these lessons that turns her into a much more well-adjusted person at
the
end.
I don't think she does learn lessons. Like, that's the trouble.
Yeah.
She's not that well-adjusted. If you've seen Requiem for a
dream. Things go bad.
Which is a sequel to this film. I had that written down.
Jeez, that movie. That was your fault, Vicky. I watched that when we lived together.
I know, it was awful. We all just had to leave the room
crying. One of the most harrowing visual experiences I've had.
I don't know whose idea that was. Like, was anyone feeling a bit edgy? Should we watch Requiem for a Dream?
Jeez.
I mean, did you find her unpleasant at the start of the film? Because that certainly struck me watching it again this time.
Like, precocious, but a child and a teenager, so obviously meant to be unforgivable for that.
I mean, overconfident, for sure. Like, when she sees the labyrinth for the first time before she enters it, when she's going to rescue Toby, she goes, that doesn't look too hard. It does. How many labyrinths have you seen? It looks like a living nightmare. And she's like, this shouldn't take too long.
She doesn't mind talking to herself a lot, which always is a sign of extreme self-confidence.
Which is why I think she's very good in it, because it can't have been easy doing that. And there's a quote from her where she says, at the start, it was quite difficult talking to puppets, but very soon Dave and I got over it. I'm like, I'm going to hope that on day one, David Bowie said to you, just call me Dave.
Yeah, I read that.
Because otherwise, that's a bit presumptuous.
Yeah, it's Mr. Bowie. Yeah.
So there were a couple, you mentioned Michael Jackson earlier. Well, they found a list of names that Jim Henson had for that role, and the same for this role before he cast Jennifer Connelly. So Helena Bonham Carter was up for it.
Which makes perfect sense.
Sarah Jessica Parker, Laura Dern, Marissa Tomei, Ali Sheedy and Jane Krakowski.
See, Helena Bonham Carter is an interesting idea because it seems very... British, maybe even English in its sensibilities. The sort of
well, there's a lot of English accented creatures she meets along the way.
Do you mean the false alarm that I think was from Bolton? That really took me by surprise. One of the false alarms on the walls is like, "Hey, up! How's they going?" It's like, what?
Oh, that's you mean those big faces
that
are like, "Beware!
Yeah, you're going wrong way."
Beware. That's a really nice scripted moment that I think is probably Terry Jones.
Yeah,
where Hole goes, "Yeah, don't tell us. You tell other people." He's like, "But I haven't had to say it for ages. Let me say it." And Hoggle goes, all right, say it, but don't expect a reaction.
And I think partly that's because of, you can't get more American than Muppets, but they were made in England and shot in England and Elstree. And the same with Labyrinth, it's set in America, but it was shot in England.
So plot-wise, what happens is she's got a crying baby that she doesn't want to babysit, Jennifer Connelly. And so she wishes that the baby is taken away by the goblins and indeed the Goblin King. And Bowie makes a huge entrance in a way that I like to believe I walk into rooms. You know, grand entrance, lightning behind
through
a window into a child's bedroom. And,
as an owl, maybe.
He comes in. Oh, do you know what? That owl reminded me. Have you seen this? You must have seen The Staircase.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love that so much.
Staircase, true crime series about a guy who is convicted of his wife's murder and then released. And she basically falls down a stairwell. Do you know the most recent thing about owls where they actually believe that what caused her to fall down the stairs wasn't someone pushing her, wasn't an accident. She was attacked by an owl.
Yeah, and it raked her head.
It raked her head, caused all the injuries because they found something resembling owl DNA in the scratches.
What?
So when I saw the owl...
Yeah, that owl theory is fine. And you would have had me, apart from he did it to someone else as well.
No!
He's got a trained owl.
Not the owl.
Can you imagine
if that's true?
Meeting in a bus shelter, passing the owl a bag of mice.
And a photograph of his latest wife.
He's basically Harry Potter.
Oh, my God. Hedwig, I've got another mission.
This scene when Jareth arrives on the scene, this is my distinct memory from childhood watching this. It wasn't from seeing it in the cinema. It was a few weeks before seeing the TV special they did Inside the Labyrinth, where they showed David Bowie, who I'd never seen before, to be honest, standing there with a bloke behind him playing with his balls.
Oh, yeah. And, the reach
and,
around.
And it was and it was just a magical thing to watch on the telly. I mean, that sounds dodge. But like... this guy really can do magic with these balls.
And he can't see. That's the other thing.
He can't see. And he's like... So you were seeing behind the scenes... maybe the first time I'd seen behind the scenes of a film as well. But he was in such pain every time they'd take a break. He'd be like... Oh.
And then have you noticed when he drops them, he apologises to David. He's like, oh, God, sorry, I've done it again. It's like, babe, you're doing so well. Like, don't worry about it.
I do question the idea of his title being a ball handler.
What would you prefer? Ball wrangler?
Much better.
Ball juggler?
Much better, yeah. But the goblins take the child. And apparently it is a tradition. It's a tradition that goblins will steal children, which on the surface sounds like a horrible tradition. But... you know, if it's part of their culture and this day and age, who are we to deny them that?
They are allowed to steal as many children. It's a cultural thing.
And is the baby going to turn into a goblin?
Yeah, that's what David Bowie claims.
Right.
There was a great idea, which I loved, where at the end, a possible ending was where he was luring Jennifer Connelly and she resisted him and kicked him. And as she kicked him, he regressed from this sexy goblin king into a disgusting foul goblin.
Yeah.
And I was like,
that was a Terry Jones idea.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Better ending.
So when I watched this as a kid, I remember loving the bits with the puppets. Mm-hmm. I remember loving all the puzzles in the labyrinth. I remember loving the humour. Mm. And I remember absolutely hating every single song.
Oh, God.
Every time I remember. And I think at the time, because I didn't know David Bowie, I didn't know him as this music icon. I just saw him as this guy. I'm like, do not like this guy. This guy is ruining this movie because we have to have dance, magic dance.
It's not it's not a Bowie classic. It's not up there on your top 10 for your Bowie karaoke by no means.
Well, that brings me to a question I was going to ask both of you. Would this film be better without the music?
That's the question you have to ask yourself, because if the script...
I just asked you. She always does this. Yeah.
So what are you thinking, Chris?
I ask a question and then she says that she pretends
I
haven't asked
it. You really touchy this morning.
My answer is quite simply yes.
I like Magic Dance because I think it's a really fun scene. I think all the other songs feel out of place. And the trouble with Magic Dance is it just makes him seem so much less threatening as well as a villain.
Yeah, do you think? Yeah.
And this is the thing about his entire performance, because there are moments where he's genuinely quite funny. Forgetting Hoggle's name all the time. And there's a warmth to him. And you're like, oh, he's just having a laugh. I'm going to turn you into a prince. The prince of the bog of stench. And you're like, cool, that's nice. But really, then there are bits later on. That whole ball thing in the globe. And he's like, yes. It's all a bit creepy.
Because the tone is off. Because if David Bowie was responsible for shaping the tone of the script, so he wanted it to be less overtly sexual in that goblin ball scene, and he wanted it to be funny, then you can have that, because it's a kid's film, but then it's very awkward to then still involve what was variously referred to, which obviously I've got an issue with, a sexual awakening or a sexual blossoming, like women are flowers, beautiful flowers, and if it was a boy, it would be like burgeoning sexuality or like... something with power,
question.
Whatever. Yeah.
If you were a flower, what flower would you be? I'd be like a sword or a dagger or a gun.
Yeah,
or something.
I'd be like a gun flower. Have you heard of the gun flowers? Or I'd be like a wasp flower. Like...
Have you seen Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I really hated that scene when I was a kid because it was just boring as well.
Yeah, but that's because as an adult, you're watching that, you're like, masked ball pretty much always equals orgy. So where's my orgy?
I feel like Kubrick watched that before shooting Eyes Wide Shut.
You know, you were talking about these immersive experiences you're going to at the moment.
Like, fingers crossed, like, is it going to be the one?
You are not allowed back to secret cinema. I'm sorry.
I thought this was an orgy. I'll just put my clothes back on and get on the bus.
I bought a VIP ticket.
Nothing? Sure?
The filmmakers talk about this scene, though, is the scene where he becomes sexual. And they believe that's the first time he becomes truly dangerous to her and to the audience.
Yeah.
And it's as much about him as her, this scene.
But what, because he's worried? Oh, see, now that's bullshit, isn't it? Because a lot of... there are a lot of men in this world that are like, well, she tempted me into it, and we can't be having that, I'm afraid, because she's a child. So just no, big red fucking cross through that. And the idea of a young girl being sexually, whatever, awakened or blah, by an older man, that's not the problem. That's understood. I get that. That is like perfectly acceptable, perfectly reasonable. When you're a teenage girl, you take these messages that you need to be available to be overpowered, and you can sometimes like run with it and definitely try and hook up with a much older man, because boys at that age are a bit shit. But then eventually we sort of settle down.
My God, that's right. The girl I fancied when I was 15 years old at school was going out with a 26-year-old who drove a Vauxhall Astra.
You can't compete with that shit.
I was like, what? I had to wait until she was 17 and I was like 17 and she was eventually like, do you want to go out? And I'm like... Yes. Still don't have a Vauxhall Astra, but is that cool?
See, I've got the same stories. As I don't end up with a girl at the end of them.
Oh, Chris.
Bloody hell, Alex.
It was really common when I was at school. Everybody had
of course. It's part of the problem with this film was I think it, certainly for a kid it was all over the place because that stuff was too adult for me. I didn't understand the Bowie stuff or who this bloke was. I just wanted to see the puppets. And then when you get older, it's just this big confused hodgepodge of ideas. And I think it does contradict itself over and over again. I don't understand half of the advice and philosophy she's dishing out or getting given. It's like...
But what it does do, I'm going to stick up for this movie, not just because I picked it, but because watching it again, you do look at it and you go, that movie today would not be made with puppets, with sets. Everything on that screen would be CGI.
Very sad.
It is. I miss the Muppets. I loved Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
I used to have a 45 single of the theme tune to Fraggle Rock, and I used to get stoned and play it at 33. And it's a totally cool, like, slowdown. Dom, 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 da-dom, dom.
I think I would just regress dum, so quickly if I were to hear it again. Ba, ba,
ba, ba, ba. It's really great. If you have the 45 vinyl of Fraggle Rock, go to your record player and play it at 33.
So shall we talk about some of the creatures in Labyrinth? I feel like we've overlooked them a little thus far.
Yeah. Sure.
Sir Didymus is my favourite.
Yes, me too.
Me too.
Okay, good. With respect to Hoggle, though, I think Hoggle's a really interesting character, possibly the most interesting character of all the creatures in it. I like the fact that...
I don't like him.
I like the fact that he's very honest, very early on about who he is. There's a great line where he says to her when she's like, why don't you just come and help me? And defeat the Goblin King. And he goes, look, you have to understand my position. I'm a coward and Jareth scares me.
And did you see that behind-the-scenes footage of the six people bringing him to life? It just looked impossible.
And yet it was possible.
Well, there's a quote there, isn't there? It always seems impossible until it is done.
Ah, and the other quote, impossible is my middle name.
Yeah, my quote was from Nelson Mandela, and I believe that one was the same.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's when they said, you'll never get out of prison, it'll be impossible. He's like, impossible is my middle name. Nelson Impossible Mandela. I did cry at the end when they appear behind her in the mirror and they each say goodbye. I think I'm getting more and more emotional as I get older.
Are you pregnant?
Yes. What about Ludo? Can we talk about Ludo?
Hate Ludo. Sorry.
Well, I haven't got much of an opinion on Ludo.
No? I think he's great. What is actually one of the moments that I remember from watching it as a kid is those horrible, bald rat monsters on the sticks that the goblins are using to bite him.
The angry fetuses.
And I remember being really sympathetic towards him. And apparently he made an appearance on the red carpet, which is a royal premiere they had for Labyrinth in the UK.
Yeah.
Prince Charles, Princess Diana were there, and on the red carpet was Ludo.
Were you hosting it?
It was my first one, 1986.
Hello, I'm Alex Zane. Welcome to the royal premiere.
And Ludo was on the carpet, and Prince Charles apparently saw Ludo and went, isn't it wonderful?
Wow!
Isn't he wonderful?
Honestly.
And that was the quote that they got printed, but I honestly wonder where...
Radio 4 is listening in right now. You are like, keep it up.
But honestly, you wonder, because of Prince Charles, whether he got, isn't it wonderful? Can I hunt it? It's like a very big fox. I know we've talked a lot about this 40-year-old David Bowie versus 14-year-old Jennifer Connelly and the connotations. I don't see the overtly sexual thing. And I'm surprised that so many of the filmmakers are talking about it because to me, there's a real innocence about this movie. So I'm just laying my cards on the table.
Well, Henson had three daughters who just passed through this age, all three of them.
Okay.
He was making a film for his daughters because there weren't enough films for young women around that time. And what's a 13-year-old girl think of this, you know, watching this at the time or watching it for the first time at that age? Because that's who I feel like it's aimed at.
Yeah, I mean, there is an illicit thrill that is absolutely valid and you can explore that. I mean, I think, Alex, you are being a bit naive. I mean, Jim Henson said, David Bowie embodies a certain maturity with his sexuality, his disturbing aspect, all sorts of things that characterise the adult world. So it was on purpose.
George Lucas said, Jareth is the devil.
I mean, that's pretty strong.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I saw him and I went, one day I'm going to wear trousers that tight. And I did.
But Bowie is more on your side here, though, in the way he played it. He says, I think Jareth is, at his best, a romantic, but at worst, a spoilt child, vain and temperamental, kind of like a rock star.
Look, David Bowie said about this, I'd always wanted to be involved in the music writing aspect of a movie that would appeal to children of all ages. It had a lot of heart. The script itself was terribly amusing without being spiteful. I was hooked from the beginning. That doesn't sound like a man who went, I wanted to play a sexual predator in a kid's movie.
Yeah, I know. But then you circle back because then you're like, but what about the cat suit? See, it's, you see, you go round and round forever.
It was the 80s. Fashion was crazy.
And he can't help being sexual.
Mm. Very sexual man.
I heard a story that he wasn't particularly happy with this film years later, partly because he couldn't remember making it. I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe that the Shaun of the Dead guys, in the scene where they're throwing the records, they wanted to use Labyrinth, and he won't give up the rights to it for anyone because he just wants it to go away and pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Maybe he feels different. Well, maybe he felt differently about it a few years later, but at that time it was just something he was like, oh yeah, that was a bit of a weird thing I did. And
there's, have you seen the, I'm not going to rip it off, I'm going to directly reference it, the Honest trailer for this. So they open the, it's very, very funny. It's on YouTube. So it says, from Jim Henson and Terry Jones, starring David Bowie, comes a kids' film that's as weird as you'd expect from Jim Henson, Terry Jones, starring David Bowie. That's true.
That's what I was going to say. Have you ever read Eric the Viking by Terry Jones? There are some weird moments. I remember being read it by my mum as a kid and sort of going, why is there a naked old man in the sea? There's a whole bit with the old man of the sea, and it makes a point of going, he's naked, apart from his beard. And you're like, this is creepy.
I'm sure you guys saw at least some of these names, but in the book they had the full list of names they found that Jim Henson initially wrote down to play the role. So you mentioned Michael Jackson. Mm. Sting was obviously came close to getting the role. Mm. David Lee Roth.
Did not know that one.
No.
Rod Stewart.
Okay.
This would be a good one. Freddie Mercury.
Really?
Yep. Prince.
Yeah. Can we just rewind one? Freddie Mercury, I think, would have been phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree.
In that role.
I agree, because I thought no one else could play that role. And then it's like, oh, actually, Prince would have been an interesting direction to go in. She would have been taller than him.
Yeah.
And finally, and I think you're going to like this one, Mick Jagger.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I saw that when I was like, what?
There are some overtly sexual lyrics in some of the songs, I think, which is also adds a layer of weirdness to it.
Yeah, so I know he knew he was making the soundtrack to a kids' movie.
Exactly, so you don't need to say anything else.
Also,
you said in that sentence.
There are only so many words that rhyme.
What?
With clock.
Vagina.
A song's a song. He probably didn't think. He was like, that's a great lyric. I'm going to put that in. She's 14. Oh, man. Have we got time to re-rick? We don't. Okay. I'll just deal with the fallout.
He said in that TV special that he's pretty sure that Jareth would rather be hanging out in Soho than doing what he's doing.
Yeah, he's loose. He's, you know.
There is apparently a sequel.
Mm.
A sequel/spin-off.
I might know the person directing it.
Fede Alvarez.
And I messaged him, but I haven't got a message back yet.
Oh, really?
I don't think he'd give us the exclusive for this podcast because he's been keeping shtum about it. But
the girl, though, eh? I respect that. Yeah.
Written by Nicole Perlman, who did Guardians of the Galaxy script.
Yeah, and obviously Fede Alvarez did the brilliant Don't Breathe, so I'm quite excited.
Evil Dead. He's a good dude.
Yeah, Evil Dead, but Evil Don't Breathe was brilliant.
Yeah, Evil Dead was better.
Really?
So the tragic thing about...
Are you serious? The 2013 remake of Evil Dead?
Yeah, I really liked Evil Dead. I thought it was really effective.
It's better than Don't Breathe?
Yeah, it scared me more. I thought Don't Breathe got a bit silly.
Oh, no, I thought Don't Breathe was one of those movies.
Both good films. Fede, if you're listening, both good films.
Yeah, all right, yeah, I wasn't saying it was a bad film. We've just got to get the order right, and you've got it wrong. So, sorry. Fede, I know I'm addressing you directly. I don't know you. But let me just jump in here. Love both your movies. If I texted you, I know you'd reply. So, thank you for the text that we will receive. But right now, just saying, Don't Breathe slightly better for me. It's a personal thing. All right, cheers, Fede.
Shall we talk about something a bit sad then? Labyrinth opened at number 8 at the US box office week of release. So it's behind Karate Kid 2, Back to School, Legal Eagles, Ruthless People, Running Scared, Top Gun, and Ferris Bueller. I mean, that was a strong week. But still, it's just sad. It grossed $13 million, and it was just heartbreak for Jim Henson, and he didn't direct another film.
No, but I did read that his son said that by the time of his death in 1990, he'd become aware that it had grown into this cult favourite and people loved it. So he did leave us knowing that people had fallen in love with Labyrinth.
And you can't put a price on invading children's nightmares for the rest of
their lives. Can you? Exactly. I do like the quote that Duncan Jones did say, that he got the urge to become a filmmaker, David Bowie's son, from spending all the time he spent on the set of Labyrinth, which I think is wonderful. So if it has a legacy, the legacy is great shit like Moon and Source Code.
He controlled a little goblin up in one of the windows in one scene.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now we're on to Free Jack Chris.
Free Jack plays out in a futuristic 2009, where nuns have guns, the poor eat rats, and dying rich folk transfer their consciousness into the bodies of people from the past. With the film's villain deciding that the perfect vessel for his brain is inside the star of Mighty Ducks 1, 2 and 3.
Oh dear.
Why me? Why don't they just grab somebody who's alive now?
Take a look at these people, Alex. They've lived half their lives with no ozone layer.
Welcome to my mind. Don't resist.
Lose your mind and you can live forever.
So, how happy are you that I gave you Free Jack? Because I had to rewatch this, and I haven't rewatched this since probably about 1993, 94 when it came out on VHS. I really enjoyed it again. I enjoyed it as a kid and I enjoyed watching it, and I will defend this. I think this is a much maligned cyberpunk sci-fi.
Have you ever been so ill that you've hallucinated and then different patches of different stories and then, oh, Mighty Ducks, and then, is that Mick Jagger? It's a fever dream, which is not the end of the world. You know, that can be quite a good fun, but I don't know. I found it a bit hard going. There's about 4 hours where someone's walking through a warehouse. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake.
That is, granted, I knew, do you know what? I even knew you'd pick up on that bit where Vasendek, Mick Jagger's character, is hunting Emilio Estevez, and it's the slowest chase ever. And you're like, wow, this has been going on a while.
I wasn't a fan of it at the time, and I'm still not a fan of it because it just feels derivative of so many better other science fiction stories, all of which hit screens around before and after this film, and all of which were written by Philip K. Dick. which is ironic because this was loosely based on a novel that came out long before Philip K. Dick wrote those books.
Immortality Incorporated.
Yes, yeah. By Robert Sheckley from 1959.
Mm.
So
very loosely based on it. I think that is just about the shifting of consciousness from one person into another.
Into a brain-dead body.
Yeah.
Ron Suchet, who wrote and produced this film, he read that while he was studying theatre at UCLA and never forgot it. Suchet went on to write and produce Total Recall. But I've got no doubt that the direct success of Total Recall led to this 2 years later, happening a year later, because there are so many similarities, and yet I feel like one tells the story well and the other one, it's just so dull.
You're done.
Do you want to rebut now, or shall we talk about the story a bit? Because I think we have to do a fair bit of setting up with this one, because A, I don't think everyone will have seen it.
Really? The main interesting thing about this is Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger playing the villain Vasendek. Now, I think he is absolutely brilliant. And I'll tell you for why. He is the only person, it seems, who knows he's in a very not great movie. And he performs accordingly. And my theory is that if this isn't your main job and you're like, I'm in the Rolling Stones, you know, then you do not really mind that you're there going, get the meat.
But then there's an echo and it goes, meat, 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 forever.
We'll have to see how the quality this is, but this is Mick Jagger talking about...
Is this on Entertainment Tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you found it?
Have you got it as well?
I've got it quite loud.
You do the loud version then.
All right.
This gives you a little bit of an insight into how he got the role and why he took it.
But mainly how much thought he put into starring in Free Jack. Here we go.
It's his first movie in over 20 years, but he told Garrett Glazer that his decision to do it was rather spur of the moment.
Right now I'm working on a solo album project, and just before that started, they said, well, we'd like to do this feature, and I said, let me see it. So they said, well, we've got to know by next week, because it starts shooting in 3 weeks. So I said, OK, I'll do it. So probably if I had 6 months to think about it, I probably would have turned it down and said, oh, no, it's not quite the one I want.
If I'd had 6 months to think about it, I probably would have turned it down.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, there's a lesson to filmmakers there. Go, you got a week, think about it, and you will get Mick Jagger.
But do you want him?
Yeah. Can we also, just because that interview is fascinating in terms of the time capsule it represents, do you want to hear about what Mick Jagger got up to with Emilio Estevez when they were shooting in Atlanta in this movie?
Emilio Estevez, what was it like working with him?
I enjoyed working with him. I thought it was a really good, fun guy. We went out a few times, went to a few strip clubs in Atlanta.
Did you?
That's what people do in Atlanta. It's like perfectly okay, darling, I'm off to the strip club after work.
Mick Jagger seems to be displaying his famous Playboy image, but with his recent marriage to longtime girlfriend Jerry Hall and the birth of their third child, Mick's fifth altogether, you'd think the rock star would be the perfect picture of a family man. Guess again.
You can have 5 kids, you know, without actually being a family. Oh, no, I shouldn't say that. That's very unkind. If any of my children are watching, I didn't mean it. Okay?
What did he just say?
You can have 5 kids without really being a family man.
Jeez, what a... I say this every week, what a thing it must be to be a man.
It was different times. That full Entertainment Tonight is quite incredible. There's a premiere screening of it attended by none other than...
David. Gary Busey.
Well, I was going to kick off with David Bowie.
Oh. Sorry, I get so excited about Gary Busey every time.
But Gary Busey does add some depth to proceedings. By when he's asked what he thought of the film, he says,
Free Jack is a great statement about what could happen if we don't get our heads out of the sand.
Okay.
Yeah. In a Gary
Can we,
Busey
come on,
accent.
Gary Busey right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Sorry, Chris, I haven't done a single impression.
Chris, I can't feel pressured into them.
Don't let him make you do things you're not comfortable with. That's a rule for the rest of your life.
Right, as I said, before we get too
deep into
this.
Before we get too deep into this, should we talk about the film's plot? Because need to have a clue what this film's
about.
I
would like to talk about the plot because I'd never heard of this film and I watched it and that's as much as I'm going to say about that. All I will say is even if Mick Jagger, it's interesting to hear that interview, even if he wasn't 100% like, this is the best thing I've ever read, is he not the guardian of his own image? And you expect living, walking, red hot, carnal energy. And when you first see him, he just sort of takes his hat off and goes like, let's do this. And he's like, I was expecting like raw fucking sex to walk across the screen and smash buildings to pieces with his energy. And that doesn't happen
You cast, we'll get onto the plot just one second.
No.
Well, you cast Mick Jagger. And what I love is like he's meant to be this hard as nails bounty hunter slash, as they call him in the film, bone jackers.
Yeah, cool.
Awful, awful name. And like they've gone, right, Mick, you've got to wear this big military style helmet. He's like, yeah, I'll do that, but I'm going to have my fringe just sticking out from underneath because it's my hair. It's what people know about Mick. It's like, and also because he's so thin and waif like,
yeah.
And that helmet is so big, he looks like a lollipop.
Yeah, he does. It's ridiculous.
I mean, all the helmets make them look silly in this film, don't they? I think some of the costume design and automobile design leaves a bit to be desired. This is not a cool look at the future, is it?
I don't know. I like the fact that they really got the sound design when Mick Jagger walks anywhere is creaking leather. Creaking
leather. That is true.
Do the plot. Let's get the plot out.
So Mick Jagger and his team of bone jackers, they snatch people from the past just prior to the moment of their deaths for use as substitute bodies.
For people in the future.
People in the future. Rich people who are in poor physical health or about to die, they can steal these young bodies and put their minds inside.
Hmm.
In 1991, Emilio Estevez plays Alex Furlong, who's a Formula One driver who is about to die. And so we meet him. He's a cocky young upstart. He's dating Rene Russo. But then, bang, he has the crash and he wakes up in 2009. And is he supposed to be dead or alive?
So what's supposed to happen?
I'm really confused by this scene.
The moment they snatched him from the past... What's supposed to happen is they snatch them, but when they arrive in the future, they're not meant to have any brain left. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just a vessel for whatever reason from the transporting process. But he's still got all his brain power. They're trying to lobotomize him. And I think that bit where these doctors who are like, we're in control, we're the ones in control, we're going to lobotomize you, all get lobotomized themselves. Yeah. I thought that was a great dark moment.
Possibly undone by the scene 5 minutes later where he sees a skyscraper that advertises the year he's in. It's like, welcome to 2009. And he has to check what year he's come from himself by looking at his own wristband that says Alex Furlong, 1991, like he'd forgotten when he used to live.
Yeah. How big are his thighs in the opening scene, by the way? I couldn't take my eyes off them. There was so much meat.
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 Meat. Get meat. The meat. 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 Meat.
Maybe that's why he uses that line. He's like, yeah. Look at those fucking thighs. Get me that meat. 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 Meat.
Oh, dear.
So from there on in, it's sort of a cat and mouse game with Mick Jagger trying to catch him, him trying to figure out what's going on, him reconnecting with his ex, and then trying to uncover the mystery of who it is that wants his body, which... Is that the worst mystery in the history of films?
Oh my god, he gets told about 50 times. It's Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. It's what?
Do you want to hear what Anthony Hopkins thinks of this movie? He appeared on Letterman and he was shown a series of photos from his previous movies. Anyway, this is him on Letterman talking about Free Jack.
Uh-oh, here's trouble. Look out. Get ready. Hang on.
What's that?
This is Free Jack.
Great film. Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Emilio Estevez.
Right.
I didn't know who that is.
Yeah. Nope. And what was the idea? This was this a like a futuristic?
It's a terrible film.
Science fiction.
Everyone's clapping. Like, yeah, it was fucking shit.
Anthony Hopkins, not a fan of this movie.
The first time we see Anthony Hopkins properly in this film, he's on a video screen. The second time he's on a video screen, he's literally phoning it in.
Oh, very good.
In his film.
Very good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I actually quite enjoyed the crash at the start. I thought there was real tension.
I remember that so vividly from the trailer, actually, because this film got delayed by about a year. And so that trailer you saw very early on, and I remember that car crash looked amazing in 1991. Mm. And actually, the whole trailer, it's a really strong trailer. I was so super excited about this film.
Yeah, so Obviously, Anthony Hopkins is the one who's looking for Emilio Estevez's body because he's in love with Emilio Estevez's girlfriend, Rene Russo, and he thinks that if he has Emilio Estevez's body, she's going to love him back. He's dead for the whole movie, and he's contacting them from beyond the grave or the spiritual switchboard, yeah. Which I like. I like the idea of there being a spiritual switchboard, and I thought you might as well, Vicky, seeing as it sounds like something that might be in R.I.P.D.
Yeah, I didn't mind it.
Right?
Yeah, I quite liked it.
So what is it? It's a supercomputer? Is it the early starts of the internet? There's definitely a green screen in there somewhere.
Well, it's the early idea, which is really interesting that as before these things are invented, as human beings, we still have some notion of what they will be. So it's the cloud, obviously, but just a 90s version of the cloud.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to talk to you about, Vicky, purely because we were talking about this recently and how much you love Tony Gilroy.
I know.
You know what I'm about to say?
Yeah, I do.
Dan Gilroy, his brother.
I don't get it.
Was one of the writers on Free Jack.
Those talented, talented boys. Yeah. And then to use like your IMDb, Dan go, yeah, Nightcrawler, amazing. And then you're like, what? How could this have happened?
But do you know what his response would be? I've literally just met Rene Russo last week. We're going to get married. I couldn't give a shit about this film. Because isn't that nice? Something good came out of this awful film. And they're still together today and they actually did Nightcrawler together.
But he's such a dick to her throughout that whole film.
Who is?
Dan Gilroy.
Wow. Have you seen a behind the scenes that I haven't seen?
No.
Because that won't annoy me, but it will annoy the shit out of Chris.
I mean, Dan Gilroy.
What? It's just something I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, it was free on the
I got sent it.
Who he is.
Fede Alvarez sent me it. He heard we were doing it on this show. You missed out.
No, what I'm saying is someone's writing lines for Emilio Estevez that make him treat Rene Russo not very well. So this is the most offensive line in the whole thing, and it's extremely, extremely offensive. They're about to shag again after 18 years apart, and she stops him and she says, "Stop, I'm so much older now." And he's like trying to convince her. Like she's like, "I'm a hag, get off me." And it's like, "You are obviously gorgeous." And towards the end, when the switcheroo has happened between Emilio Estevez and Anthony Hopkins, or has it or hasn't it, and there's a bit of trickery, he then turns to his underlings. He's like, "I'm pretending to be Anthony Hopkins. I'm going to leave here now. And you, Rene Russo, you are going to dress in something more appropriate, and then we're going to leave." It's like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean? Like,
but he's being Anthony Hopkins in that
he's
scene.
Anthony Hopkins loves her. Why?
Yeah,
he
but he's also an arrogant prick, and it's the kind of thing he would say as one of the most richest men in the world. There's a bit because there's a whole other subplot to this, which is a corporate subplot. So
I always bloody love in these sci-fi films.
Jonathan Banks, who has the best villainous face in cinema, plays Mark Michelet. Yeah. And he has a meeting with Mick Jagger's character, Victor Vasendek. And there was a moment where I was like, I had to check IMDb because I was like, in this new world order, is there a new law that says the first letter of people's surnames shall be the same as the first letter of their first names?
Can we talk about New York a bit now, or what's happened in the intervening years? There's been some kind of trade war that America has lost. There's been a 10-year depression. New York's now a collection of dangerous sectors where there's gun-toting gangs roaming the streets. The rich lived in walled-off private communities, whereas the poor are all hooked on new drugs that are really strong, and apparently alcohol that's quite strong.
I thought the future doesn't seem all bad. He doesn't pay for that drink, number one, and it's quite strong, number two.
Emilio Estevez has a drink at a bar called Revolution, which is a bit on the nose. And it's so strong, he thinks he sees Mick Jagger's wife asking him questions for the Clip Channel. The Clip Channel.
Jerry Hall, I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I was like, hang on. I'll tell you something that is good. Amanda Plummer.
Well, that's what, before I got interrupted, I was going to say that
before me?
No, but I feel like...
Do
we really need to think about that?
Maybe
me and you should have a meeting at some point.
I feel like...
We'll have a drink and just discuss how we work this better on the show.
Yeah. Open-ended questions.
Because it is something that needs talking about.
Let's see how long it takes for him to get really mad.
I'm going to sneeze.
Everyone is sneezing. We are poking a hornet's nest right now.
I've run out of tissues as well now. Oh, I just want it to end. I'm so I'm so hot. Thank you.
More tissues, darling. if you don't know Amanda Plummer, she is obviously any of you fucking pricks move and I'll execute every motherfucking last one of you, who is great in that and great in this.
Have you seen him in Butterfly Kiss? Do you remember that?
No, yeah, but yeah. I did swallow a butterfly once.
Did you? Yeah.
It's like it's just the same. That's the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that what the movie's about?
Yeah, kind of. You should watch it.
Is it a sequel to The Butterfly Effect? I have seen that.
Of course you have. I remember you watching that.
Great.
You were like, I've seen this amazing film. It's like, shit, what's it about? You're like, if a butterfly flaps its wings.
Yeah. That's a good one to do. We should do The Butterfly Effect and A Sound of Thunder.
Yeah.
Go on, Chris.
So she's a nun who has a huge shotgun and kicks men in balls.
Yeah.
And she's hardly in the film. Mm. Where you've got Emilio and Rene, who, to me, feel like they're sleepwalking through proceedings.
Yes.
You've got them two. And then I'd also want to bring up Eagle Man, played by Frankie Faison.
Oh, the Eagle Babies thing.
The man eating the rats.
What the fuck is that?
I love that scene.
That's a great moment. That is such a moment where everything stops and you just have this guy
for sure.
The analogy of like, because Emilio Estevez is like, I'm giving up.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, would an eagle doing this ever go, it's too hard to be an eagle and just drop to the ground? And Emilio Estevez goes, I see what you mean.
Yeah. And I get it.
Can I have some river rats?
Yeah. And then he walks off and he says, don't give up, Alex Furlong. So he knows who he is.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, he is like an in disguise member of a resistance group that will be like, oh, come with me, we can get you to safety.
No, because at that point, obviously, it's been revealed on all the news channels.
$10 million.
Yeah, there's $10 million reward for him. And this guy doesn't choose to turn him in or anything. He just gives him some sage advice.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And he also gives you a nice little lesson on how to prepare river rat.
Which was interesting.
You never know when you might need to know that.
Cut off the head and tail.
I mean, it's pretty standard butchery.
Got
I'm not having a go at him, but
no, it's all about the sauce. I felt like it was all very similar to Nando's.
What's your sauce in Nando's? Let me guess, you have no sauce.
And also...
Why do you say that? I always have the herb one, and then it's always more...
You have the herb sauce!
It's more hot than I'm wanting it to be.
You're such a mum.
I think I have medium now.
I've got a card from Nando's that gives me unlimited Nando's.
Have you?
No, you haven't.
No, they don't exist.
Look at his face, you do!
Oh, so let's move on to...
Why has he ever taken us to Nando's?
Can we talk about David Johansen from the New York Dolls?
Yes.
Because he is fucking phenomenal.
So the third person in this, who's barely in it and is much better than the leads, and you're like, mate, give these people meteor roles.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's so good.
He exudes sleaze and creepiness, doesn't he?
Yeah, and honestly,
he does in real life.
And also in Scrooge. He's so good. He's the cab driver in Scrooge. Anyway, when he died, I was like, ugh. It's, you know, my whole problem with Alien Resurrection, where Michael Wincott and Dan Hedaya died too early. Mm-hmm. I felt a lot like that about David Johansen.
Yeah.
This is why, to go back to the reason I picked this movie and Mick Jagger's performance, he genuinely feels like he's having a laugh with a movie that he knows is ridiculous. And there is something about him that he just seems to love the chase. He's not really interested in the cause. He just loves having someone to go up against.
Because he gets fired in the first scene.
Yeah,
so
I'm just going to do it anyway.
Well, would you like a quote from him that says exactly that?
From
the LA Times in 1991. He says, as I play him, Vasendak enjoys the pursuit and he's good at it. Now, when he catches them, of course, he empties their brains out of their bodies. But his excuse is that these are guys that are already almost dead.
Well, now that's the big problem, isn't it? Because this film is like, it's immoral to steal somebody's body, but Emilio Estevez would have died.
Yeah, so I'm not
so
like,
who
it's not,
gives
it's
a
not,
shit?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, only, and they just took him maybe a fraction of a second too early, so he arrived with his brain still intact.
He wouldn't know any different.
Yeah.
Also, Anthony Hopkins is like, it will make me immortal. How does it make you immortal? He will die at some point, so that doesn't make any sense. And the most frustrating scene of all, which I fucking hated, at the bit with the consciousness swap at the end, it's like, prove that you're Anthony Hopkins. Oh, I will know this ID number that no one's fucking mentioned at all at any point. We haven't seen you see it. So when he's
I thought it was what he had to put in on the keypad moments earlier.
But the problem is, is, then...
He just makes it up.
Yeah.
And then Vasendit goes, you didn't get a single digit right, which is a great payoff.
Stop looking at me when you do that. I don't like it. So the problem is, the climactic scene of this film is Emilio Estevez shouting, six! Silence. Nine!
No, but it's not silence. I agree with that bit. Because Mick Jagger goes, go on then, read the number. Oh, yeah. And then Emilio Estevez goes, six. And Mick Jagger looks down at the pad, looks back and goes, continue. And he goes, nine. Mick Jagger looks down, looks up and goes, the next.
What
he goes, four. And like they leave a beat where Mick Jagger goes, one more. And another. It's, do you know what it's like? It's like a consonant, please.
It's
a vowel.
Yeah, it is like lewd countdown.
Emilio Estevez's brain is fully functioning in this though. When
is
he's,
it? I don't know if it is.
When he's in the chase sequence, he goes when Vasendik can't catch him. He has the immortal line: "Vasendik, you couldn't catch the clap if you were a whorehouse." I mean, I don't know that. An actual whorehouse can catch the clap. I think it's...
As in the building.
Yeah.
It's in the walls. Do what you want with the wind, but don't touch the fucking wall.
What's that sound inside the walls? The clap's free. It's running around. I know what you mean about the film noir thing you were talking about earlier, when Emilio Estevez is wearing that trench coat as well. They put him in a trench coat at one point, and I used to have a coat like that, and it made me think of my childhood when I used to play fancy dress.
Yeah.
And I had a coat like that, and I used to be like, well, other kids were like Batman and Spider-Man. I used to pretend to be Lieutenant Columbo.
Did you?
I was Columbo. And only recently I saw a photo of me in that coat, and I was like, oh, that's I look cute. Like Columbo. Looked like a tiny flasher.
Is that old material as well?
I'm doing one a week to see whether you spot it.
Isn't it funny how we can tell?
Yep.
Tiny That's flasher.
Funny, isn't it?
Little winky.
I thought me saying tiny flasher was as weird as that would get. To go back to the reason I picked it, I think Mick Jagger is a fucking ton of fun in this movie. He's like...
Yeah, and by all accounts, he added all the humour to that character as well. It was quite a humourless character when he got hold of it. And it was his idea for him to be taking those little drugs. Eating those little bits and pieces.
Oh, was it? Do you know? Okay, so that scene really sticks out when his mate Ripper, who has the scar that is never explained, and he makes him take the test.
That's a good scene.
Another plot point that goes nowhere, though. Yeah. It's like, make the someone else new take the test.
We never see that.
And Ripper is like, I can't believe you mistrusted me, boss. I would never do that. I'll take the test, and puts his hand down, and it goes cleared. And Mick Jagger walks away. It's because he's walking away as he does it, goes, I wasn't testing you. I was testing the machine.
That's really good.
Really good moment.
He says of that stuff, I wanted him to be an addictive personality. I wanted the character to have an addiction. Most everyone has, but I didn't want him to be addicted to cigarettes or alcohol or drugs. So I had him addicted to eating pan, Indian leaves wrapped around condiments. Pan gives you a little high.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
Mick Jagger.
Really?
Just talking about what he brought to the role.
What he was wrapping inside a leaf.
He bought humour and pan.
I always wondered about this, so I ended up looking it up because I remember Emilio Estevez in this. I didn't watch The Mighty Ducks as a kid, so I sort of missed that period. And so the next time I saw Emilio Estevez was in Mission Impossible, when he's there at the start and he dies and he's uncredited. And I was like, but that's Emilio Estevez, the guy from Free Jack. He's like a big deal. Why is he dead at the start and uncredited? And it's because Tom Cruise had a cameo in Young Guns, the Emilio Estevez film. So he did the Return the Favour.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right then, so... If we've reached the end of our journey through the future of 2009, we've done Free Jack, we've done Labyrinth. Which film is going to be the victor in this week's Clash of the Titles? Remember, the connection is performances by stars of 1985's number one single, Dancing in the Street. So it's David Bowie's performance versus Mick Jagger's performance. What are we going for?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Chris first.
Okay, so I just want to briefly talk about the films before I get onto the connection.
Sorry, what have we been doing for an hour and a half? Is there
Are you not hot?
Do you know what? There's a funny bit on last week's. I was just listening back to it. And Chris goes, I do have a point to make that I wasn't allowed to make earlier. I was like, what? So tell us what we've not let you say earlier.
Well, Free Jack, the trouble is it needed the twists and turns of a Total Recall or a Blade Runner or a Minority Report. And it's a film about stealing a life, but it is itself completely lifeless. Yes. Whereas Labyrinth is so full of joy and life and fun that if we're comparing the films just on their own, it's going to be Labyrinth for me. But in terms of performances, the issue I've got is Mick Jagger being in Free Jack actually takes me out of the movie. Because I'm always seeing Mick Jagger. Whereas David Bowie, although it's kind of a shock seeing him, he's also this otherworldly person in real life. And I can't imagine anyone else being a Goblin King. We said Freddie Mercury maybe earlier, but even then, David Bowie feels like a Goblin King.
But, I mean, Freddie Mercury already has It's a Kind of Magic, which is better than Dance, Magic, Dance.
Hell yes.
Sorry, I thought this was my opinion. No? All right, it's Alex's opinion.
I've already forgotten a bit that I was going to say now. That's lost to the sands of time.
David Bowie Labyrinth.
No, go on.
All
right, fine. Fucking having a go at me. I've actually got no more. Vicky. So you're going David Bowie Labyrinth. Vicky.
The trouble for me with Mick Jagger in Free Jack is that he wasn't Mick Jaggery enough. Like, it's him, but I know that you, Alex, have said that he's having a good time, but I could have done with even more, like, of a knowing wink or something, just something a bit bigger, something that makes me think that's Mick Jagger messing around rather than that's Mick Jagger meeting an unexpected tax bill. So, and like you say, Chris, David Bowie. Because, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, 80s Bowie is bad Bowie. But there's this, and I know that maybe people weren't as proud of it as they would like to have been after the fact, but you can't help but think of David Bowie when you think of this film and think of it really fondly. And the sexual overtures, they're just the right side of the line. So there's no issue for me there. So it has to be David Bowie in Labyrinth.
Well, there you go. We have a winner this week. It is David Bowie's performance in Labyrinth.
What would your vote have been, Alex?
I'm going to tell you, Chris.
I know you are.
Sorry, there is a bit that I wanted to say. I would have 100% gone Mick Jagger in Free Jack. I think he's fantastic in it. It makes that movie for me. And considering both your arguments at the start of this about this predatory man hunting a 14-year-old girl, I'm surprised at you picking Labyrinth. I mean, this is the best. This is why we're here.
It's better if you can see them dancing, though. It's the dance moves in this video.
Have you ever seen the silent video of Dancing in the Sky?
Yeah.
Fucking great. Fucking great. Vicky, have you seen it?
No.
We're tweeting that out.
On YouTube, the silent video of Dancing in the Street is possibly strangely one of the funniest things I've ever seen. All right, that is it for this week's Clash of the Titles. Our winner is
the world of Labyrinth.
So, who's picking next week's movies?
I am.
Chris.
Yes.
So tell us.
Alex, I am giving you 1995's Congo. That is Congo.
Thank you, Chris.
Love it. While Vicky, we're travelling 20 years into the future for 2018's Rampage.
Great.
I'm sending you on a rampage.
Brilliant. They're my favourite kind of age.
Oh, knowing your feelings for Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I think this is going to be an exciting episode. You're a fan, right? Thank you very much for listening. If you do want to get in touch with us about whether you think Labyrinth and David Bowie should have beaten Mick Jagger this week, or indeed talk about Congo and Rampage ahead of next week's show, the details are what?
If you want to email us, it's show@clashpod.com. And if you want to hit us up on Twitter, we are @clashpod.
Once again, as always, thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in a week. And please, if you would, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, or Apple or Spotify. You're the best. Bye-bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.